Welcome back to the Fascinating Facts, I Bet You Didn't Know podcast. I'm your host, Shrikant Gelker, and in this podcast, we just talk about random, fun, interesting facts about a single topic. And this week's topic is a random assortment of facts. I just felt like, you know, maybe no topic this week. We can just find a bunch of random facts, absolutely random, and just share them, I guess. Anyway, let's get into it. Fact number one. Did you know that goosebumps were a defense mechanism? So, you've probably had goosebumps before, right? And you've probably wondered why you get them. Whenever you're cold and you shiver, they just kind of pop up out of nowhere. But did you know they were originally a defense mechanism? So, our ancestors, hundreds and thousands of millions of years ago, our ancestors had a lot more body hair than we do nowadays. Think of basically like a primate, like a monkey or something. Think about how much body hair they had. We had that much, right? And whenever our ancestors got like scared or angry and they went into their fight or flight response, the goosebumps would happen. And basically there are these super tiny muscles that are connected to each little hair follicle, and those contract, causing the hair to kind of like stand up. And during that fight or flight response, because the hair would stand up, it would floof us out a little bit, making us seem bigger than we really were. And they'd also come up when our ancestors were cold, because as I said, the hairs would like floof up. But this time, instead of making us like a bigger, they just trap body heat, so we'd feel warmer. But nowadays, we don't have as much body heat. We don't have that much body hair. So, we haven't evolved out of goosebumps yet. So, we just see little bumpity bumps. Anyway, that's basically it. On to fact number two. Did you know that being scared of needles is evolutionary? So, everyone is scared of needles a little bit. You can't deny it because, as I said, it's evolutionary. Everybody is scared of needles just a little bit. But do you know why? So think about this. Less than 200 years ago, if something metal pierced your skin, you were probably gonna die. Even if it was super tiny, with like the smallest cut ever, you were gonna die because there was absolutely horrible hygiene, right? And any super small cut could get infected. So generally, having metal or anything piercing your skin was very bad. But in 1853, Scottish physician Alexander Wood and the French surgeon Charles Gabriel Provaz both invented the syringe, the shot thing, by themselves independently at the same time. So ever since then, having a small metal thing pierce our skin and inject something into you is actually a good thing. And it's literally been just less than 200 years, so our brains just haven't evolved over time to understand that something metal is good. And that's why everybody is just at least just a tiny bit scared of needles, but you can get over the fear. Alright, on to the next fact. Did you know the wood frog can hold its pee for 8 months straight? So, everybody knows that if you need to pee, you really gotta go, right? Not for the wood frog. So, in the state of Alaska usually has around 6 to 8 months of really cold weather. And during that time, the wood frog hibernates. It goes to sleep for a really, really long time. And during that time, its heartbeat slows, its body temperature drops a lot, but it just kind of sleeps through the entire winter. And here's something really surprising. In those 8 months, as I said, it holds its pee, those 6 to 8 months. And the pee actually helps keep the frogs alive. Let me explain. So the frog has these special microbes inside its intestine that takes pee and extracts the main waste part, like the yellow part in the pee, which is called the urea. And it takes that and it kind of transforms it into nitrogen, which helps keep the frog alive. So that's really cool. Imagine being able to take your pee and filter it out, and like the pee turns into something that saves your life. That's honestly super cool. Anyway, on to the next fact. Did you know that cotton candy was made by a dentist? So, if a lot of people might not know what I'm talking about when I say cotton candy, you might know it from a different name. Some people call it candy floss, some people call it fairy floss, some people call it Swikerspin, and some people call it Barbe a Papa. So, if you know any of those words, that's what I'm talking about. And so, let me start over. Did you know that that was made by a dentist? And everybody should be really surprised because it's literally just sponge sugar. Why would it be made by a dentist, right? Well, there was a dentist named William Morrison, and he wasn't really doing a very good job as a dentist. And so one day he partnered with a man named John C. Wharton to make cotton candy, just because he felt he needed another source of income. But nobody knows if he decided to make cotton candy so that way more dentists would get more people. But he decided to make it. So how exactly is cotton candy made? Well, so you've probably seen the machines, right? Sugar is placed inside this huge spinning circle, which has a smaller spinning circle in the middle. And that smaller spinning circle is very hot. It's so hot that when the sugar is put in there, it melts. And that melted sugar is spun a lot, right? So it kind of shoots out of the circle and it goes through like a screen that kind of like spreads the sugar out, making it nice and airy. And then it's caught on like a cone or a stick or something and eaten. So that's pretty cool. On to the next fact. Did you know that Marie Curie currently is radioactive? Like, literally, her body is like radioactive right now, and it's inside a coffin that is lined with 1 inch of lead. But why? Well, let me just say this. The real reason is super complicated, because she was a physicist. So what I'm going to tell you is going to be grossly oversimplified, extremely oversimplified. You can just Google her up if you like don't fully understand what I'm saying, or if you want to learn more. So we begin with a physicist called Henri Becquerel. Yes, Henri Becquerel, right? And he was studying the element of uranium. And while studying it, he found out that uranium, the element itself, like he had just like a block of uranium, it emitted rays. Like, rays just went out of it. But then he died. He just didn't live long enough to figure out what the rays were or anything like that. So Marie Curie decided to continue his research. And she studied those waves that were coming out. And she figured out that no matter what happened to the uranium, no matter what condition it was in, the rays would keep coming out of the uranium at a steady rate. And she studied this for a while, and she made a few assumptions, and she made a few theories, but she came up with one theory, which was that the rays came from the atomic structure of the uranium itself. Like, uranium was literally creating those rays to go out. And she also named those rays something we all know called radioactivity. Yeah, so she kind of created, in per se, radioactivity. She kind of found it. And she studied those rays, and she realized that every single thing has some amount of radioactivity coming out of it. Like, If there's a cup next to you, there is a very small amount of radioactivity. You have some radioactivity coming out of you. The mic I'm speaking into has radioactivity coming out of it. Everything has a bit of radioactivity. But back then, it hadn't been discovered until Curie just did, right? So what Marie Curie did is she studied a lot of elements. Like, there were some elements that acted just like what they were supposed to be, but they were extremely radioactive. So they were new elements that hadn't been found. For example, polonium and radium. Curie found both of those new elements because they were extra radioactive than normal. And that's pretty cool. So throughout her life, Curie researched radioactivity a lot, and she studied it. But the problem with that is, while she studied, her body absorbed a lot of those radioactive rays. Now, something to keep in mind, too much radioactivity can kill you, right? And that's basically what happened to her. Her body took in so many radioactive rays, it killed her. In 1934, she got a plastic anemia, which was caused by the radiation, which basically is a disease that makes your body not be able to make enough blood cells. And because of that, on July 4th, 1934, she died. And she was exposed to so much radiation and radioactivity that currently her body is still radioactive, which is why she is encased in a coffin that is lined with 1 inch of lead. Okay, on to fact number 6, and this will be the final one for today. Did you know that dolphins use pufferfish to get high? So a lot of people know about pufferfish. Pufferfish are basically fish, and when they get scared or they're like running from something, what they do is they suck up air through their mouth and puff themselves up into a ball with spikes, right? And it's a good defense mechanism because the spikes are very sharp and they just like poke anybody who tries to eat them, right? So it's their defense mechanism. But there is a certain type of pufferfish that releases a special toxin when it puffs up as an extra defense. The problem is, dolphins love that toxin, and it makes them high. So basically what they'll do is they'll find one of those pufferfish, they will deliberately push the pufferfish around with their noses until it puffs up and releases the toxin, and they will like enjoy the toxin, they will like absorb it and just kind of play around in the toxin because it makes them high and they love it. And that's kind of funny. Anyway, those are all the facts I have for you guys today. Thank you so much for listening. Leave a review if you like. Message me on Anchor if you like. Once again, thank you so much for listening. My sources document is on my website, which is in the description. Bye.